Access number 177 477, rail 16.
I think when we left you, you were on the Volturno, dug in, waiting to support the crossing operations. How long were you actually concealed before the active operations began?
Looking at my records, I see that we... We 6th of October, 43, we had moved into a harbour en route for our destination. Then we moved to a more advanced one the same day. And we eventually, also on the same day, the 6th of October, came into action with our guns, ready to cross the Volturno River, which was being hotly defended by the Germans as their next line of defence, oblique stroke retreat. We were about 4,000 yards from the enemy, which is, what, about 2.5 miles. We dug ourselves in, and this was still on the 6th of October, and we settled in there for the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th and 11th. Building up stocks of ammunition. As I think I said, I was acting as battery sergeant major because he had malaria. I was awake, well, not awake, but working most of the night. We knew that there was a big barrage in the offing to help the infantry cross the Volturno. And we heard an amusing account of our battlefront on the BBC, all about the mud, in a fairly light vein. It wasn't all that light when you were there. And then we heard that we were going to attack the German 7th Divisional Group. And on Tuesday the 12th of October, we prepared for the attack, which started at 8:50 in the morning. But we soon found that the infantry assault was less successful than had been hoped, and we had to reduce the range of our barrage. We fired consistently from 8:30 to 12:30, 4 hours of it. The guns would be getting rather hot. I was dashing around with the whistle to make myself heard, giving gun firing orders. And everybody was totally exhausted after 2 or 3 days that there had been build up and then the barrage for 4 hours. And I noted the relief of taking my boots off at last. And the following day, 13th of October, is a day of general tidying up with occasional shelling. The fire, so to speak, to coin a phrase, had gone out of the battle for a time. And we, in fact, did no firing at all in retaliation. It began to rain, more and more mud. Managed to get sleep from 8 till 1. And then up to be on duty dealing with ammunition supply. By this time, we were on to a different rationing basis. We'd been in action now since the early part of September, and it takes that time for the supply lines to produce sort of regular food. Up till then, we had been on American compo rations. And we found that on the changeover to RASC rations, we had, for example, no chocolate, no Player's cigarettes issued as standard. And in the middle of a relatively inactive day, we suddenly heard that Italy had declared war on Germany and was now a co-belligerent. So Italy, having been taken out of the war about 6 weeks earlier, well, rather less, 5 or 6 weeks earlier, was now on our side. And, of course, this was bound to mean a retaliatory action by the Germans.
Can I ask you a bit more about the action on the Volturno? You were about 4,000 yards from the enemy. Presumably the river was in between.
Yes.
How far were you from your bank of the river, the south bank of the river?
I would have thought that that 2.5 miles represented where we were in relation to the river at that time, because the enemy would be just the other side of it, and our infantry would be nearing this side of it. I can't remember with any more accuracy than that, but...
Did you have a view forward from your gun
position? No, it was flat.
Flat?
Yes, it's flat country there. It was the river plain. But there was a town on the river itself called Santa Maria Capua Vetere, which became a place, sort of place one remembers, because there was quite fierce fighting there, and because there was a horror of one of our bombardiers going up a water tower to help with observation for the guns. And the ladder was shot away. The ladder which led up the outside of the tower was shot away, and he was left wounded and stranded, and nobody could get to him. We all knew he was there, but nobody could get to rescue him, and eventually he died up there. And there could hardly be a more public sort of death. So that was something which made that place memorable. I've noted, in fact, that Santa Maria Capua Vetere, I noted this same day, the 15th of October, that it's a lovely town, so far untouched. We're now 3,000 yards from the enemy. That's rather less than 2 miles. And then we hear that there is a sea invasion north of the Volturno. Now, whether that was a false rumour, I don't know, because it was way before the Anzio invasion, so it was probably just a rumour. We also listened avidly to the news of the Russians forging ahead on the Eastern Front. And then we found that our new allies, the Italians, were willing to dig our gun pits, which was a great help.
Had you seen anything of the Italian army before this?
Not of the Italian army, no. We'd seen stragglers who'd left the army, and we were, of course, told to keep our distance from them in human relations terms.
No fraternisation?
There was no fraternisation. And of course all of this was destined to change once they became our allies.
How did people in your unit respond to this news that the Italians were now allies rather than enemy?
Oh, I think with cynical amusement, because one had not regarded the Italians in the same light as the Germans at all. It was a toss-up whether you would rather have them on your side or the enemy's side. This was the Tommy's view of the situation, not to be taken too seriously. But we had found the Italian civilians, and we presumed that a lot of the soldiers in the Italian army must have been the same, to be very agreeable, peaceful people. This was offset to an extent by tales of cruelty and to an extent barbarity committed by the Italian army, certainly in North Africa, Abyssinia and all that sort of thing. So we were aware of two sides of Italy, the peaceful side, but the ability to become, as we thought, quite different when in uniform under dictatorial orders. It was, in short, a mixed bag of feelings about the Italians.
Now, who were the Italians who helped dig the gun pits? Were they soldiers or were they...
No, the soldiers were not organised. They were not at that stage organised. Later on, we did find ourselves as... We shall find out in the Gothic line in the north a year later, actually, with Italians fighting as units alongside us. But at this stage, we're talking about about civilians who would otherwise have been working in their fields.
You were saying that you had to do the duties of battery sergeant major.
Yes.
What were those duties?
I can't remember, is the simple answer. We were all jacks of all trades in this sort of battle situation, in a set piece pattern. Of course, we know what the layouts were of troop commander and gun position officer and troop leader and all this kind of thing. But in practice, when people were taken out of action, either ill or wounded, and this was an illness case, everybody mucked in. And so long as somebody was formally allocated to act as the battery sergeant major, that was sufficient. It meant that you could be called on to do certain things. In this case, of course, the BSM was the senior NCO in the whole battery under the major.
When you did the shoot in to support the infantry in their attack across the river, What kind of shoot was it? Was it a creeping barrage, or was it a barrage with lifts, or was it time concentrations? Or were you on call?
It's so long ago that I can't even remember the difference between these technical terms, but it was what I would have called a creeping barrage. You would fire for whatever it was, 200 rounds at a certain distance, and then you would up it by 50 yards, 100 yards, 200 yards, subject to immediate correction of these distances, ranges, by communication with your battery commander, who was up with the battalion, or troop commander up with the company.
Do you recall who was forward on this occasion? Was it the battery commander who?
The battery commander and the two troop commanders were all forward, and they would be with the, I would think it was the Royal Fusiliers at this stage.
Did you know anything about the infantry's own manoeuvre plan? What they were intending to do?
Only that they were going to cross the river, and that there were engineers standing by to build bridges, or a bridge, and to clear mines.
You mentioned that you were firing very frequently for 4 hours, from 8:30 to 12:30.
Yes.
But do you remember what stage you learned that the infantry attack was not going according to plan?
No, I don't remember at what stage. I would think that this would be known within the first hour and a half of that time. It would be apparent that they were not taking the initial targets or objectives as readily as they had hoped to. And we would get the message down the wires to lower the range, because we were not hitting the Germans, because the Germans had not yet retreated that far.
Did your communications all depend on wire for this particular
battle? They never depended wholly on wire, but wire was the mainstay, because it didn't require charging of batteries or renewal of batteries. But the radio was always there as a backup. And, of course, the backup was frequently necessary, because shells, enemy shells, could very easily wreck the wires. Until they were mended, you relied on radio.
Did you receive any incoming fire from the German artillery during this?
Well, it wasn't troublesome, because I've said that we did receive occasional shells, but we didn't fire back, try any counter-battery fire back, because we didn't regard this shelling as important enough. It was spasmodic and occasional, and just a try-on on their part. It was not serious stuff.
And you also said that you were up against the German 7th Divisional Group. Did you know anything about them in detail?
No. Well, I probably knew at the time, because we got situation reports, and it would tell us which divisions were involved. and I still have the material which would confirm that. But I can't remember how many divisions were in this group.
Was this operation wholly abortive, or did they manage to get a foothold across the river?
Oh, no. It just took longer.
You mentioned the town.
Yes, Santa Maria, Capua Vetra. Oh, sorry. It was Santa Maria degli Angeli, which was the lovely town. Angeli, which is a lovely town. And that was a little way back from the river.
Had you had an opportunity to go and explore it?
Well, I noted the following day that I took a truck into Santa Maria and bought wine, and also found a shop open and bought a silk scarf as a gift to send home, and various oddments, and also some excellent Marsala. Well, the wine included excellent Marsala. I was doing the job of battery sergeant major again, responsible for distribution of ammunition to the gun positions.
And wine.
And, wine, of course, had its own sagas. Not infrequently, shell splinters managed to pierce casks of Marsala, either deliberately or whatever. I've noted here that our Italians have now become attached to us. Presumably this means that we took them on to the strength for the purpose of giving them food and taking them under our wing, as long as they worked for us.
These were all Italian civilian labourers?
These were Italian civilian labourers, yes. Some of them, as I say, may have been stragglers from the army, and that would increasingly tend to happen.
You say attach themselves to you. This sounds as though the active side of the relationship was on their side, not on yours, and that you were receiving offers of work rather than going out looking for labourers to help.
I think it was a bit of both. I mean, just as one foraged for eggs and chickens, one would, when you were trying to dig gun pits and were tired, you would look around for available labour, and you met halfway, so to speak.
Do you remember roughly how many of these Italians there were?
No, I don't. I would have said not more than a dozen, probably, in our battery, but useful.
Did they travel with you, or did you?
I think, in a very minor way, they probably became camp followers for a few days, but not for a whole campaign. It was very casual, and who authorised it, I don't know. It was the the best traditions of the British Army, that you make the best of what is available.
Perhaps it wasn't authorised.
Perhaps it was not authorised, but they got their food anyway, and that was sufficient to satisfy both sides. We obviously didn't take them onto the payroll.
Now, you're saying that you visited this little town. Was this the same town that you had to shell because the Germans were in it, or is this a separate town? Is this the Capua Vetra?
No, this was Santa Maria degli Angeli,
yes.
And on the river, or just over it, and I can't remember which without looking at maps, was Santa Maria Capua Vetra, meaning near Vetra, is just beside, just beside Capua, we had an ammunition point at a town about 10 miles, I think, behind the lines called Avesa, where we used to go and collect the stuff. And by this time, we're talking now about the 18th of October, it was quite clear that the enemy were retreating. And we knew this as gunners, because we had to fire supercharge. Supercharge went with 25 pounders, went up to about 8 miles, which is considerable range and makes a fantastic noise, the kind of noise which must be accounting these days for many of the claims for hearing loss pensions.
Were you issued with earmuffs or?
We had earplugs, but of course people tended not to use these things. There was always a reluctance to obey drills of this kind in the army, but also, to an extent, these things were regarded as a bit sissy. And also, of course, it did stop you from hearing things you ought to be hearing, orders. So earplugs were not the foolproof answer. They would certainly protect your ears, but they would not make for smooth running of a gun position. And the engineers had done their job after the sort of delayed start to this crossing. The infantry had got across on the little boats, and the engineers had done a most wonderful job of building a Bailey Bridge across the Volturno, of which there's a very good painting in the Imperial War Museum by Sir William Coldstream. And at 1 a.m., we and our guns, we had a sudden order to move, and we crossed the Volturno at 1 o'clock in the morning over the Bailey Bridge put up by the engineers. We got across and moved almost immediately into a gun position where we had to dig very hard and rapidly, and there was no sleep for anybody all night. The urgency was because come daybreak we knew that our position would be overlooked by the enemy. There were occasional shells during the night. People were allowed 2 hours rest, but there was no real sleep.
How wide was the river?
It's quite a considerable river, the Volturno. I would think about 150 to 200 yards. It wasn't a stream. It's a big river.
How did you manage to maintain control over the battery while you were moving? Was it a moonlit night or was it a dark night? What were the conditions like?
It had been very rainy weather. I didn't think there was much bright moon at that time, though I could see, if I looked in my diaries, whether it was a full moon or not. But what I do remember very clearly was having to shepherd the battery and the troop along, riding up and down the convoy on motorcycle without lights. We were in a total blackout situation, of course. It must have been rather hazardous riding a motorbike, although I haven't said so. I know it must have been.
How did you actually find the bridge?
Oh, there was no problem about that, because you had only the one main road. It was a single route leading to the bridge. And in any case, there were sort of the equivalent of beach masters shepherding people along to get them over as quickly as possible. There was always the fear of somebody breaking down on a bridge. In fact, they didn't, but crossing a bridge of that kind was a very critical operation. Heavy traffic, sort of Piccadilly Circus, all in the dark.
Who actually did this beach marching? Would that be the military police?
Yes, the military police were occasionally in evidence in this kind of thing, just as they were later at Anzio. I can't remember which units were given the job of beach master traditionally, but I remember that, of course, Dennis Healy was beach master at Anzio.
He was a naval officer, wasn't he?
Was he a naval officer?
Was he not naval?
I didn't think so. I thought he was an army major.
Oh, yes, you're right, he was. Yes.
But what unit he was in, I don't know. I don't think he was a gunner. However, that's another matter. We can easily check. I've got his autobiography in there. What I have noted, and this is interesting because I had forgotten that it was true in late October, was that the mosquitoes were wickedly in evidence. I had to recross the Volturno the next day to join huge queues for ammunition. All the ammunition depot itself, I've noted, I can't remember exactly where it was, but I've noted that it was all within easy reach of German guns. As well as collecting ammunition, I managed to buy a collection of supply of nuts and wine and postcards to hand out to people so that they could write home. This was presumably still in my capacity acting as battery sergeant major. A subaltern on a gun position would not have been sent back to collect ammunition.
Was this bridge wide enough to have two streams of traffic, or was it
a... No, I think it was... This is interesting you should raise that point, was when I noted that I had gone back across it. That was the implication, but I don't think it was. My recollection is that it must have taken turns to go one way and then the other, a kind of, not a traffic light literally, but a traffic light sort of situation.
Presumably, I mean, the Bailey Bridge had raised sides.
Yes, and it was on pontoons.
On pontoons, but it would have been safer than crossing the traditional type of pontoon bridge.
Without sides.
Without sides.
Yes, that's right. We had this in one or two places later, I recall, but this was quite a significant bridge, the Bailey Bridge across the Volturno.
While you were crossing it, were the enemy shelling it?
Spasmodically, I don't think they had got the range. It's strange, again, you raise this, and it goes through my own mind too. It seems such an obvious target that you would have expected it to be blown to bits. I think part of the thing was that they were themselves in some disarray at this point. They were in heavy retreat and were not in a position to measure things up as they would normally have done with German army competence. I've mentioned that the ammunition dump itself and the queues of vehicles waiting to collect ammunition were all within range of enemy guns, but they were not, on the whole, being shelled, not seriously. So presumably the Germans were regrouping, and that includes moving their guns to new positions.
Now, your new position, just over the river, have you any idea of how far it was from the bank of the river?
No, I can't remember, but I would have said that it was certainly within half a mile of the river, because we had to get dug in before daylight, and that is a big job.
How did you find that position, that new gun position?
You anticipate that when you ask that question. I ask myself it too, but I look at my diary and I see that we were only in that position for 2 or 3 hours, and we were all on the move again at 4:30, and we got the guns out of their dugout positions and we were away at 6:50 in the morning.
Presumably this must mean the Germans had made an unanticipated retirement.
They were going fairly quickly, I think. It was very hot, I noted, and we had to be very careful because there were a lot of mines left by the Germans.
What was the ground like in this temporary position you've been in? Do you remember anything about...
I can't remember, but I would think it was most typically a cornfield or a vineyard. Mm.
What about the view forward? Presumably you...
Very little, because it's flat.
Again, it's flat.
We were beginning at this point to see the hills on the horizon leading forward to the Apennines on our right, leading up towards Cassino and the whole area beyond the Garigliano was coming into view. All throughout this move up... the western side of Italy, one was conscious of big mountains on our right.
You were on the coastal
plain. We were on the coastal plain, you see, the Garigliano, the Volturno, from Naples north, the Volturno, then the Garigliano, and then up towards Rome along the Appian Way, if you like. I was suddenly posted, for no reason that I knew at the time, and I still don't, but there was it must have been casualty. I was posted to a different battery, from 254 battery D troop to 444 battery. F troop. And yes, I see the reason why, I suppose. It's because the F troop had recently had a severe mortar attack by the Germans and had suffered casualties. And it also had a new troop commander because he'd been, the previous one had been wounded. I noted by the 22nd that I was beginning to learn another battery's techniques, every battery. And the battery was the basic unit, of course, in artillery traditionally from, the Napoleonic Wars onwards and before that. It was the battery rather than a grouping of batteries in a regiment, rather than troops in the battery, which had its own ethos and pride.
How